This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 28th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 179. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Jim Mullen, president of Football Canada and the host of Crown Gridiron Nation on TSN, for the view from Bowen Island. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or does the BC Liberal opposition lack passion as it continues to fail to keep the BC NDP government feet held to the fire? Under Andrew Wilkinson, the party suffered its worst election result in almost three decades last fall. A leadership race is on now, but you'd never know it. Only Aaron Gunn has thrown his hat in the ring. Who is he? His resume says he's the former Canadian Taxpayers Federation spokesman behind the Canada Proud Facebook page. Last week, Gunn got in a tussle with the NDP's Katrina Chen and Nikki Sharma. Chen and Sharma say BC is systematically racist. Gunn said it is not. Chen and Sharma called Gunn a racist. Gunn fought back with a compelling statement on social media saying that he is not. Gunn knows how to use social media, but he doesn't really have what it takes to be the next premier of BC. He is, however, showing the BC Liberals what they need. They need a pit bull in question period in committees. Someone like Federal Conservatives Pierre Poilievre or Michelle Rempel-Garner. Mike DeYoung sometimes tries to play that role, but he's yesterday's man. He's been around way too long, and he's got way too much baggage. The legislature is on spring break for a few weeks, which is enough time for interim leader Shirley Bond to rethink her wishy-washy strategy. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, Chinese state media stirs up netizens to boycott other Western brands after H&M fallout over Xinjiang cotton. The boycott of Swedish clothing chain H&M by Chinese netizens spread to other global fashion brands, including Nike, after Chinese state media rallied consumers and Chinese celebrities to snub other Western brands. H&M issued a statement about forced labor in Xinjiang, which produces 87% of China's cotton. It happened the same week that the US, UK, and Canada sanctioned four Chinese officials. In Taiwan news, new Taipei 7-Eleven customer buys drink for 23 Taiwan dollars, wins 10 million Taiwan dollars. The customer paid about 80 cents for tea and won the equivalent of $440,000 in the Taiwan Receipt Lottery. The Ministry of Finance's Taiwan Receipt Lottery happens on the 25th day of odd-numbered months. In the New Zealand Herald, virus was in New Zealand earlier than first thought. New Zealand's first announced case of coronavirus, a man who'd returned to Auckland from Iran via Bali, was reported on February 28, 2020. But there's now evidence, discovered only through a weak positive test some 7 months later, to suggest another returned traveler from Italy had already started a cluster of potentially six people. That traveler arrived February 23, 2020 from Italy's hot zone, Lombardy. 2 days later, a family member went to hospital with a flu-like illness. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, possible Ebola exposure leaves four in Oregon under monitoring post-travel, officials say. The Oregon Health Authority contacted individuals who traveled to Guinea and Democratic Republic of the Congo. Unlike the coronavirus, people without symptoms cannot transmit the Ebola virus, and none of the individuals being monitored had shown any signs of the illness. Guinea has reported 18 Ebola cases and 9 deaths. Democratic Republic of the Congo has seen 12 cases and 6 deaths. In the Seattle Times, Sounders unveil secondary purple jersey inspired by Jimi Hendrix. Paying homage to Seattle's musical icon as part of MLS and Adidas Community Kit line, which allows clubs to create secondary jerseys rooted in individual meaning for each team. It also includes the logo of the Puyallup Indian Tribe, which is behind new sponsor Emerald Queen Casino. Jersey sales proceeds will be donated to charities. Sounders kick off the season April 16th at home to Minnesota, the home of the late Prince. Czech news. Fish farms and conservationists tussle over transfers in court. Mowi Canada West hopes to convince a judge to allow the transfer of young fish to a limited number of farm operations to complete their grow-out cycle. Otherwise, the fish will have to be culled, resulting in significant revenue and job losses. An environmental coalition is arguing the Atlantic salmon farms could continue to expose plummeting wild stocks to risk from disease and parasitic sea lice. The federal government announced earlier this year that it would phase out farms in the Discovery Islands, impacting 19 farms. And these headlines in the Breaker.News last week. For sale, luxury car dealership, cars not included. City of Vancouver avoids fine after 2019 worker death. And Suez stuck ship clogs canal as global shipping industry faces rough 2021 seas. Go to thebreaker.news to read the stories behind the headlines. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Joining me this week for a return engagement is Jim Mullen, president of Football Canada and the host of Crown Gridiron Nation on TSN. He's joining me from his home in Bowen Island, British Columbia, for The View from Bowen Island. It's a piece of paradise in Howe Sound, just off West Vancouver. What is it like today? What is the mood on Bowen Island? And how is early spring on Bowen?
I think everybody's managing here, quite frankly. Everyone's observing the mask rules and for the most part, distancing guidelines. I think one of the encouraging things that I've been able to see out of Vancouver Coastal Health, at least for our little area, is we've been for vaccinations grouped in with the Sunshine Coast, which means we are getting vaccines slightly ahead of the rest of Vancouver. I think it's part of a strategy, it's a similar strategy that was applied to Whistler. As a small community. So I don't know when I'm going to get stabbed or jabbed around here, but it might be slightly sooner than our counterparts a ferry ride away.
So the tourism slogan on Bowen has been, don't visit Bowen for so many years because it's such a nice, awful place. But the past year, it's been, please, no visitors. There could be a different summer if the vaccination program does speed up a little more and we're allowed to roam around a little more and enjoy our environs.
Yeah, and I think the businesses here have found ways to cope. For instance, the Bowen Pub has encouraged bulk order pickups of food and, very few of them deliver here. You don't get deliveries on Bowen Island, but during the first wave of the pandemic, we had deliveries. They do pickups now. It's been pretty good, actually, in terms of the way that they've responded. Now, I think this place is a little slow to respond on the front end of this thing, but recently, it's been a fairly safe environment.
It's been a difficult environment for the Canadian Football League to do business. One of the few sports leagues that was not able to make a comeback in 2020. There are plans. Randy Ambrosi, the commissioner, has been quite optimistic in recent months about the vaccine rollout and what that could mean about a return to play for the players and a return to stands for the fans, which would please the broadcasters, please the sponsors. Of course, the curveball of the XFL starting to talk about an alliance or maybe even more with the CFL. Where are things right now from where you stand?
I'm also the president of Football Canada, which is responsible for amateur football in this country. From our perspective, the one thing that is of concern to us outside of the rule code, which we manage on the amateur side, is the player ratio. We hear all kinds of things. The one thing about the way the CFL announced that they were talking to the XFL, they were talking about talking, has left room over the last 2 weeks for a whole lot of wild speculation. And I think people have been filling the space with all kinds of information. Quite frankly, you know, we don't know what's being said between those two parties, but you know, there have been credible rumblings about an adjustment to the player ratio. My approach to this is that, okay, the CFL is a business and they've got to find paths to finding more revenue, to generating more interest. My personal opinion is that the ratio is very important to the football ecosystem in this country. And the university teams in this country who didn't play football last year, there wasn't a Vanier Cup last year, are under, you know, some worry and some stress and some strain. They haven't been in a position where they've been able to take in student fees, with many of the universities going to remote learning. Without student fees, there are no athletic programs. Football is looking to a start up again on the university side in September. The training camps will start later, save a bit of money doing it that way, start the season a little bit later, have a shorter season. But with the financial challenges with a number of the university teams, with an unofficial Title IX in this country, which is equal player representation with it for student athletes on both the female and the male side, there's a couple of reasons right there where athletic directors and administrators might take a look at a football program and think twice about it. The last thing we need right now is to have a pro path that is provided to youth sports programs from the CFL through the ratio cutoff. If there's not that pro outcome, I can see a number of youth sports schools reevaluating what the worth of football is. And football is a very expensive program at the university level. I hope we don't go down that road. And I think the Canadian Football League, when they revisit this, this particular issue, will probably take a thoughtful approach on it.
What is the CFL looking at? Will it be able to have games in all the home stadiums, and will it be able to have fans, even a reduced quotient of fans?
It's going to be a challenge because it's a race between the variants and vaccines, and we don't know which V is going to win in this, do we? We do see expanding numbers, even though there's vaccines making their way into the community. I'm worried that the variants are going to win this race, and if they do win this race, that will put the start time of professional football in this country in jeopardy. However, I do think there's a path there, at least at the start of the season, to run games without fans in the stands. I do think there's a path to slowly repopulate those stands. And the one thing that I've learned about, managing a national sports organization through this pandemic is you can't predict what's going to happen. You can make all kinds of assumptions about how the market is going to respond, and a lot of the times it proves you're wrong. We were looking at a decrease of 30% of our spring registration in comparison to 2019. We thought a lot of kids, a lot of families weren't going to come back to football. Instead, we've got provinces that now have waiting lists for kids to play football. We have provinces right now that have registration that's also in and around 90%. Of what 2019 was. So there is demand there. There has been that stickiness with the players and the families with football. You know, the question is that same engagement, is that same pent-up demand, is that same stickiness there with the paying fan and the professional product? I'd love to be able to have a crystal ball and see if I had the right answer, but quite frankly, the pandemic has taught me you don't really know until it unfolds.
And other things have unfolded in recent months. Of course, David Braley, the BC Lions owner, passed away, which put the Lions ownership question back into the air. Who is going to become the owner of this team long term to solidify the franchise and bring it back to its glory days? And then another uncertainty is where will the radio or streaming rights go? Because TSN 1040, after a couple of decades of serving sports fans in British Columbia, a terrible day when the staff was laid off and the format was changed. So there's two areas there, two big uncertainties that people in Lions Land are hoping for answers sooner than later.
Yeah, I'll take the first part of that. The word that I hear is that CKNW is going to end up with the BC Lions games. That's the direction that those discussions are going in. It's interesting. I was a sports director at CKNW about 10 years ago, and we worked really hard to try to get the Lions back into the fold back then, but weren't successful. I think it's a good fit demographically, although CKNW has gone through a number of changes in terms of what their identity is in the community as well. It really follows the Chorus sales book of targeting females of a certain age rather than either a broad audience or males of a certain age. So I'm wondering what sort of traction that sports component can have on the old Top Dog. You know, I think it's potentially a really good place if they can execute it properly and build in good pregame and postgame shows. I also think with a lot of the talent that's available out there right now, post 1040, there's a possible revival of nighttime sports talk in this market. I don't think sports radio has ever really been the same since Dan Russell left the airwaves with his sports talk show. Dan and I butted heads numerous times behind the scenes, but there was also no doubt that that Dan established a product that was almost destination radio in this town and across this province. And I still think that that nighttime position on the dial holds some currency.
And finally, the BC Lions, what about that ownership question?
That is a good question. I did talk with Rob Braley, the son of David Braley, earlier this week about a few things and about this marketplace. The estate of David Braley has put money aside to ensure the operation of this team for a little while. Maybe not with the gas pedal full to the floor, but this team can operate for a bit. That's reassuring. The question is, of the groups that are in Vancouver, are they going to sit back and play a waiting game and try to wait this thing out? And are the groups that are based in Vancouver, because local ownership is so important, are they willing to step up with the financial wherewithal necessary to get the team back to where it used to be? The only other scenario I can see is the Rock coming in and buying the Lions, but I'm not sure about the likelihood of that with all of these XFL talks. I do think it's going to come down to a bit of a waiting game and a bit of a Mexican standoff between potential ownership groups and that estate. And I hope it resolves itself sooner than later, because we really need to have that local ownership, that sort of control and that ability to put a strategic plan in place to get professional football back to where it should be in this marketplace again. I do think that Bill C-218, the Sports Betting Act that was put forward by Kevin Waugh, that's gone in the third reading. I think that is the one story that people aren't talking about that could save the CFL. I think the target of some of those lottery revenues that are going to be retained within this country rather than going offshore is something that can be invested back into the CFL, back into the Canadian Elite Basketball League, back into the Canadian Soccer League. Those leagues, those domestic leagues, have an ability, in my opinion, to profit off of single game sports betting, and I think that is probably the story that a lot of people are missing while folks are arguing about the XFL and the CFL.
That was Jim Mullen from Bowen Island, BC. He's the president of Football Canada and the host of Crown Gridiron Nation on TSN.
Thanks, Bob. Anytime.
We're all in this together. And we've got to brave the stormy weather. You can count on us. We're your neighbor. And we're all in this together.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar. Brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Sport BC, the nonprofit umbrella group for 60 amateur sports organizations in British Columbia. On March 25th, Sport BC celebrated the 54th Athlete of the Year Awards, albeit a year late due to the pandemic. It's the longest running awards of its type in Canada, celebrating the best in BC sports. I was proud to be on the selection committee. Go to sportbc.com to learn more and also to watch a replay of the virtual awards show. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
Those are the sounds of country music legend and actress Dolly Parton on Twitter. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 28th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on March 28th in 1959, the People's Republic of China State Council dissolved the government of Tibet after the Tibetan uprising? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's PATREON.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.